recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
Oh, it's live, pal.
Well, isn't that something else? I mean, 40 years ago, I was doing Piper's Pit, and now this blithering idiot, a chair shot, you got people, they're pulling up chairs, they're doing interviews, you got everything you ever wanted except a good host.
This episode's guest burst onto the scene with his fix-up and custom LJNs, followed with his awesome podcast, which I was lucky enough to be a guest on. His Rowdy Roddy Piper and Don Morocco are just two of my favorites he's done so far. Guys, it's 80s wrestling fan Brian, and I got him right now.
Brian, thanks for taking the time to pull up a chair with me here today. How are you doing?
Great. I'm honored. I had so much fun recording with you on my show, and I'm just looking forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, it was really a blast. Talking to you is kind of like a long-lost brother or something. It just kind of plugs right in, and the conversations commence.
Definitely. It's like I got all these new best friends, so it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I just wanted to start off asking you where you're from and, you know, where were you born and raised?
So I grew up in a really small town, well, not really small, but a fairly small town up in Oroville, California. It's a little north of Sacramento. Lived there with my folks until I turned, I was about a year into college, and then I moved over 25 minutes away to the bigger college town of Chico, California. So I've been here since 1994. So, yeah, born in 74 and moved away right before I turned 20 in 1994. And yeah, it was a nice place to grow up. It was maybe 10,000 people in the city limits and you know, not a ton of people. So the sports I played in high school, I got to actually, you know, start and play on the soccer team all 4 years. And it wasn't like a big enough city where you join a sport and you're just on the bench the whole time. So that was kind of cool.
I may or may not have been a part of a couple of those teams where you're the 13th man on the basketball team or the fourth string right fielder and never actually get into a game. So I know what you're talking about. Chico is quite known for its college and it's a party town, right?
Yeah, they got Party School of the Year in Playboy magazine back before I started going there. And I went there for a year and a half and I started working in high school, like right before my sophomore year. So as I went to Chico State, I didn't really have a plan of what I wanted to do. So I just, I basically quit going after about a year and a half and just worked full time. It was hard to get good grades and work full time. So ended up just working full time. But yeah, it was the Party School of the Year and Playboy magazine, either it was, I don't know, late 80s or early 90s 1 year. And that's kind of the reputation it has. And now they've, for a while there, they've made it so that if you wanted to get a second degree, they wouldn't allow you back in. And now they're pretty much taking anybody as the enrollment has dropped. They used to have full enrollment for years and years and years. And then the last couple of years, it's slowed down. So if somebody wants to go there, they can get in, or if they got a degree they can't use, then I believe now they'll let them back in to get a different degree that they can use. So it's a nice town, and when in the summertime when the students leave, it's a little easier to get around downtown.
I guess we should clarify for the kids out there, Playboy magazine was this magazine. Oh, well, never mind. We'll keep it clean here. But so how did you discover wrestling originally, Brian? What drew you into it, or how did you discover it?
Oh, and it was probably fifth grade in the spring before before summer break, my buddy Eric and I both kind of got into it around the same time. But I remember we didn't have MTV or VH1. So what we did have is Friday night videos. And that was something where the local news was, you know, typical local news, either 11 or 11:30 at night. And then after that, they'd have some late night program like Letterman or Johnny Carson. And then after that, on Friday nights, they'd have an hour long program called Friday Night Videos. So people in small towns without MTV or VH1, that's where you could watch your music videos. So it was something in grade school. The other kids were listening to, you know, Bon Jovi in fourth grade and listening to, you know, different music. And so I wanted to see some of these music videos. So I would set the VCR to record and record Friday Night Videos. And then at some point in doing that, I'd always let the tape run a little long so I didn't miss the end of the show. And there was a program called Superstars of Wrestling that came on directly after Friday Night Videos. And so this was the original Superstars of Wrestling, which ended up turning into either Wrestling Spotlight, or it was one of those shows that Mean Gene ended up taking over. It was like a highlight show that they would show on Sundays. It wasn't until, so this is 1986, around April or May, and it wasn't until several months later that Superstars of Wrestling is what took over from Championship Wrestling and became the top weekly syndicated program. At the time, Championship Wrestling was like the Saturday morning, like top show. And then All-Star Wrestling was the Sunday morning show. But I wasn't watching either of those at the time. I just was recording Friday Night Videos. And then when I saw the opening to that Superstars of Wrestling show, it had like a solar system, the logo of Superstars of Wrestling, and the only talking part of the quick little 30-second opening was Roddy Piper with the Hillbillies on Piper's Pit, and Roddy Piper saying, "You been built today, you big sucker," to Uncle Elmer. And so that's where I kind of saw it, I think, the first time. And so then I started recording that show. So I would watch this Superstars of Wrestling, which is more like a highlight show, like the USA Network Mean Gene Wrestling Spotlight it eventually was, or trying to remember the name of that program. Anyway, at that point, I started watching the Championship Wrestling and the All-Star Wrestling on Saturday, you know, Championship Wrestling on Saturday mornings, All-Star Wrestling on Sunday mornings, and eventually Saturday Night's Main Event. But Saturday Night's Main Event didn't come back until I want to say it was October 4th that year was the first Saturday Night's Main Event. The one that I don't think I saw live was the May Saturday Night's Main Event, where Jake the Snake Roberts and Ricky Steamboat had the no contest, where Jake hit Ricky with the DDT on the concrete floor. But I remember seeing all the highlights on Championship Wrestling, so I know it had to be around that May period or whatnot. So yeah, that whole summer, my buddy and I were big into watching wrestling, and then eventually the magazines, and in December I got to go to my first card. So yeah, it was something where, you know, they were still using, I think it was Thriller from Michael Jackson was the theme song that they used to open up Championship Wrestling, where they showed Hogan coming through the walkway on in Madison Square Gardens. And played just the music background of Thriller as they had the opening for Championship Wrestling. So yeah, wow. That was 11 years old, about to turn 12 in July, and that's when I first started getting into pro wrestling. Me and my buddy Eric, we didn't have a bunch of other friends at school that were into it. It was mainly just us two, and then kind of went from there.
Wow, you have such great vivid memories. I'm not really good with the dates and even a lot of the memories now from those early days. You've got them really well. You chronicle them, I guess. You got them in your head. It's always so awesome to hear some of those just those cool little details that have escaped me after such a long time. You mentioned that you got to your first live event. So where did you go for your first live events, or where did you go for local shows after that first show and beyond?
Well, so on the weekly programming, they'd always have the interviews. And basically, you know, that first summer that I watched wrestling, it wasn't even something that crossed my mind as far as going to shows, even though I'd see these interviews for the Arco Arena in Sacramento and the Cow Palace in San Francisco. They would have two or three segments for each of these syndicated shows. There'd be two or three segments that were 2 or 3 minutes each, where they would talk about the upcoming show that month. For me, I was really into the Hulk Hogan Paul Orndorff feud that started in the middle of summer. I think the actual match was they showed it July 17th on TV, even though it happened around June 24th. But that was like the biggest thing going, is the Hogan Orndorff feud. And it wasn't until the end of August, where Roddy Piper returned from having filmed Body Slam. So I had seen Roddy Piper on the openings for that original Superstars of Wrestling, and I had seen Showtime showed the big WrestleMania 2 replay July 5th. So I was totally into that, and the Hogan Bundy cage match and the NFL Battle Royal. I was a big football fan from, you know, right around the time before the 49ers won their first Super Bowl. And so the Battle Royal, the cage match with Bundy, the tag match with the Bulldogs, those are probably the three biggest things from WrestleMania 2 that were interesting to me. But when Roddy Piper returned and tried to take over the flower shop, it was right as they were making the switch from championship wrestling to Superstars of Wrestling. And Jesse Ventura became the announcer with Vince and Bruno after Jesse got back from recording Predator. And so the first time that they had Piper wrestle on TV, he came in and the crowd was cheering him. It was at the same show that he filmed with the flower shop and was going to take it back from Adrian Adonis and argued with him. So the crowd was already on his side, but the crowd went nuts when Roddy came in. If you get a chance to check it out, it's Roddy Piper versus AJ Petruzzi. And basically Roddy gets into the ring and AJ slaps him in the face. So Roddy calmly puts one hand into the back of his trunks and proceeds to just beat the crap out of AJ Petruzzi the whole match. Probably my favorite squash match of all time. And until the very end, he takes the hand out and does a double axe handle after he whips AJ into the ropes and then proceeds to pin him with just stepping on him with one foot. But the crowd is just going nuts for Roddy. And at that point, Roddy was, by far my favorite of the bunch just after that one match. And so when I heard that probably November, early November, I'm guessing. They announced the card for December 5th in Sacramento, and it was Roddy Piper against Cowboy Bob Orton. And so at that point, I asked my folks if we could go, and so they ended up getting us tickets, and we were between 5 and 9 rows back, but with the pictures that my mom took that night, I think we're probably like the 5th row back from ringside. So we had really good seats. And that card out of, I only went to 4 events from December of 86 until November of 88, 4 cards plus WrestleMania 3 closed circuit TV in, March of 87. But that first event, December 5th, that one was just like burned in my memory. So got to see, they didn't have any tag matches. The crew they had was 18 wrestlers the crooked official Danny Davis and Slick was there and Jimmy Hart was there. And of course, Miss Elizabeth. So that first show I saw, I think it was Dynamite Kid and Bret Hart opened the show, and Dynamite Kid beat, or Bret Hart beat Dynamite Kid. It was actually Dynamite Kid's birthday. I think it was 28, December 5th, 1986. And then, so Davey Boy beat Anvil Neidhart in the, in the other match where they were split up. The Moondogs and the Bees were split up in singles matches. Tito Santana and Butch Reed, they fought to a draw. Billy Jack Haynes and Savage fought. And on TV, Billy Jack Haynes and Savage had two matches that were messed up by Danny Davis, basically disqualifying Billy Jack in each match. And so there was just a small program, either in consecutive weeks or like just a couple weeks apart with Billy Jack and Savage. And so like the secondary, the second match from the top was Billy Jack and Randy Savage for the IC title. And so they put on a great match. And then I find out years later that they only faced each other a few times at the live shows. So I did get to see one of those. But yeah, it was Roddy Piper and Cowboy Bob Orton and me asking my folks if we could go to that got them to drive, like I say, around 75, 80 miles to the show, around an hour and 20 minutes maybe. And that's where we started going. So we went again in March of 87, and then 9 days later went and saw WrestleMania 3 on closed circuit. And then we went again in August of 87, and then the final time in November of 88. And I know that you were able to go like all the time, having a neighbor that worked for the Cow Palace. So super jealous of you. But I think what hurt my chances of getting to go back was actually that November 88 recording for TV where they did Saturday Night's Main Event and they did Wrestling Challenge. I think it was a 4 hour evening at 4 hours to 5 hours. And so It just wiped my folks out. So I think that from then on, it was like, yeah, we're done with wrestling, or they were done. So, from then it was just watching on TV. But yeah, those first few years as a fan, those were the best. And yeah, the Arco Arena in Sacramento, it was, they rebuilt it before that November 88 show. But those first shows, there was just over 10,000 people that would fit in there. And the arena would just, it got super loud in there. We also got to see a few Kings games. My dad had worked for an insurance company, and the company that he worked for had one of four luxury boxes in that small arena. So we got to sit up in the luxury box and watch a few Kings games over the years and experience this small arena that would erupt for wrestling and Sacramento Kings. Long answers, but just reminiscing. It's fun talking about this stuff.
Yeah, man, you're right about the Wrestling Challenge, because I have, again, I don't remember all the details, but I went to a recording of Wrestling Challenge at the Cow Palace, and I was a fan, and I was burnt out by the time. It was like 4 or 5 hours, and I can't remember what some of the secondary shows they recorded behind it, but yeah, you'd see like Coco Beware come out and wrestle for Wrestling Challenge, and then, a couple hours later, they tore down the ring skirts and everything, and it was a different show, and he would come back out and wrestle again. And it was one of those weird things where in the crowd, you're supposed to make believe that you hadn't seen him yet and be just as excited as you were the first time he came out. But I do kind of remember like the pops just gradually getting less, and like, yeah, we already saw this guy once tonight, here he is again. And so that's a great fun memory. And the other thing I was going to say was, you bringing up Danny Davis, is it gets lost today as like how big of a deal that was to have a crooked referee. I mean, that was just, it doesn't seem like much, but when you're watching wrestling for 10, 15 years, and all of a sudden there's a referee that's crooked, that would, I guess they tried it again later in WCW with the NWO ref. And I guess the Hebners, to an extent, was kind of that maybe before Danny Davis or around that time maybe. But Danny Davis was such a great villain as the referee, man. That was such a huge storyline.
Yeah. The twin ref angle was, February 5th, I think, 1988. So it was a little later, and that was like an amazing storyline to have, twin referees. You didn't realize, unless I guess maybe the fans that got NWA and got WWF realized there was, Earl and Dave, but I had no idea. So that was shocking. But like you say, the whole thing with Danny Davis, it went for basically, probably 3 or 4 months in the fall slash winter of 86 until after the Bulldogs lost the title to the Hart Foundation at the end of January in 87, and Tunney finally gave the lifetime ban that ended up not being a lifetime ban to Danny Davis. But yeah, Billy Jack Haynes would have won the IC title. There's probably several other opponents that, you know, would have won the tag titles if Danny Davis hadn't interfered on behalf of the heel champs at the time. So it was totally fun. And the thing about that first card I went to is the previous Saturday night. So I went on a Friday night, but the previous Saturday night, Roddy Piper had faced Cowboy Bob Orton on a Saturday night's main event. And when we bought the tickets, I didn't know it was going to work out that way, but he made fairly quick work of Cowboy Bob Orton. It's the episode where he's in the locker room and pours a Coca-Cola over his head at the end of the match. And he's sitting there on the bench with Mean Gene. And I think it's like a yellow painted brick wall behind him. And he's talking about how he has to get rid of Adonis and Morocco next. So when we're driving down to the show on that Friday night, I'm thinking, well, he beat him on Saturday night's main event. He should be able to beat him tonight. And then we get to the arena, and they hadn't said anything about Danny Davis being the referee of the match. But we get there, and we get a program, and it has this special appointed referee just for the main event of Danny Davis. And so 12-year-old me, I'm super worried. I'm like, oh, no. They wouldn't have Roddy lose the main event of this show that I'm going to and have Danny Davis be a part of it. And so, but you know, like I say, I'm sitting there sweating it, and they had the main event about the fourth or fifth match. They did it before intermission. And basically it was something where, if I remember right, Roddy swung Orton into the ropes, and I think he crashed into Jimmy Hart, and so he fell down. Roddy got the pinfall, but it was something where Danny Davis, you know, did the slow three count that took forever. And when he finally won the match, Roddy stood up and grabbed the mic, and he forced Danny Davis to announce to the crowd that he had won the match. So it was just kind of a cool interaction for a kind of a secondary match on a Saturday night's main event, but the crowd just went nuts in the arena when Roddy came, and they were standing the whole time. So it was something where I'm not a big guy now. I was definitely not a big guy at age 12. So it was, I'm like peeking around the side of the other fans trying to catch the action in that. So like I say, luckily my mom got a bunch of pictures of that evening, not as many of that match, but she does have, she did get a couple of Roddy and of Cowboy Bob, and that's when Orton and Morocco were wearing kilts to the ring to try and upset Roddy. So the pictures I have of Orton, he's got the kilt on, and I went to a wrestling convention at the beginning of May where I brought a couple of those pictures, and when I got to meet Cowboy Bob Orton, I gave him copies of that. So that was kind of cool to be able to meet Cowboy Bob in person at least, and have him sign one of his Mattel figures for me and give him a couple pictures from December 5th, 1986. So again, long-winded story, but fun stuff to remember.
Yeah, man. Again, those are some of the details. They escape me, but every time I talk to you and you mention that, I go, my God, that's right. I remember that. I had completely forgotten. All these wrestling stories and being at these arena shows and everything, when did you discover the wrestling figures themselves?
So there was the grocery store in California that my folks went to, and it's still around now. They went to Holiday Market before that, and that's been closed a long time and done, but there's a store called Rayleigh's in California. And Rayleigh's, they had like a ramp that went down to one part of the store. The upper part had like the household items and toys and the magazine rack, and then the lower part of the store had most of the groceries. So when my mom would go shopping, it usually was after school, so my brother and I would go with her. And that's, I think, where I first saw the Remco action figures from AWA and the Bendy's line from WWF. And so my first wrestling figure was the Roddy Piper Bendy figure, the little 4-inch tall Bendy's figure. And then very soon after, that's when I got the LJN full size figures, the 8-inch. There's a, in that same parking lot as the Raley store, there was a Woolworths that had a good selection of wrestling figures. And then on the main drag in my hometown, there was also a shopping complex that had Kmart and Long's. And so both Kmart and Long's carried the LJNs. So the first one I got was a Roddy Piper figure. So it had to have been September, October, somewhere in that range. And then for Christmas, we got several wrestling figures in that Christmas of 86. And I know among the first ones were Hogan and Sheik and Volkoff and JYD and Stud. But yeah, Roddy was the first one. And so I did end up collecting all 18 of the Bendies. And then over the course of 86 until probably early part of 88, my brother and I had about 20 each, so we had 40 of the LJNs. So I had about 19 Bendies if you count the Hogan with the blue knee pads that came with the steel cage match challenge, which I think we got that Christmas of 86. And we had about 40 of the LJNs, and so and a couple stretch wrestlers, but yeah, first saw them in stores just shopping with my mom, either rest, like say Raley's or then eventually Woolworths and Kmart and Long's. So all these non-existent stores now that used to have wrestling figures. And we would have to go to Chico to shop. Usually we went to Mervyn's, which is like the old equivalent of Kohl's. And my buddy reminded me that they had a nice wrestling figure selection at Mervyn's. So we did get some figures at Mervyn's, and there's another store called Ben Franklin's that isn't around anymore that had a good LJN selection. So it was really cool when you did have to go on errands with your mom back in the day. There was plenty of places that had wrestling figures, and then the grocery stores always had the wrestling magazines. So it's about the same time that I got the wrestling figures that I started buying Pro Wrestling Illustrated and WWF magazine. And that, it was always a treat to go to those places and see those things. And we had a subscription to TV Guide, but every time we would go to the store, if it was on a Tuesday, that's when the new TV Guide hit. We might not get it in the mail until Wednesday or Thursday. So before I'd go look at the magazines or the wrestling figures, I'd race over to the little rack by the register and shoot right to the Saturday night section and see if there was a Saturday night's main event coming up or not. So that was a fun activity when you're, like I say, it just these things that made it not that big a deal to have to go shopping with your mom, because you had all these activities once you're in the store where you could take off and see if there's a Saturday night's main event or if they had any new figures or check out the other magazines like The Wrestler or Inside Wrestling. And if you got lucky, maybe you'd get to bring home a wrestling magazine.
There's nothing like that today that I'm aware of. Sure made it easy back in those times. So did you collect all the LJNs, or from that point on till the end of the line, did you get into Hasbro's and Jack's and Mattel and Gloob and all the other lines subsequently, or were you in and out? Or,
you know, basically after I don't remember seeing the stuff in 1988. So the lines 84, 85, 86, and 87, I collected pretty much most of the ones from 87 and 86. And then I don't remember seeing the 1988 or the 1989 lines. I know 89 was pretty much just Canada and mail order. But I'm guessing it was just getting a little older, like when I was 14, 15, I kind of stopped collecting them and stopped seeing them in stores and stopped seeking them out. So there's really a 2-year window where I was heavy into the LJNs. And then by the time the Hasbros came out, I wasn't even collecting them anymore. So yeah, I didn't really start collecting figures again until maybe 2015 or so. I decided I wanted to start getting the rest of the LJN line. So from around 2015, 2016, that's when I got the rest of the figures, other than that original 40 that I'd had growing up. So luckily, luckily prices weren't quite as high in 2015, 2016 as they are now. I don't think I spent more than $160 on any one figure. And that's probably about what Sergeant Slaughter cost. And then, Boss Man, I think, was around 140 range at that time. And I didn't have the, that's the only thing I don't have that's authentic is the actual nightstick from LJN. But the, but Boss Man with a nightstick from some other line of toys, I got that around $140 if I remember right. And the other four or other five figures from that 89 line, Rude and Haku and Warrior and Andre, all of them were like $80 to $120 and Warlord and that. So everything's just jumped up tremendously in the last several years. So luckily I got them when I did.
And so you were out like from the 90s until 2015, you didn't collect any figures in that time period?
I didn't. Yeah. So I was,
I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. I pretty much, stopped watching around the time I moved out of the house. Like the last match I really remember was, I think it happened on my birthday in 94. And so I got an apartment with some buddies, in 94 when I was going to, you know, start my second year of college. And, the last big match I remember was Bret Hart against the 1-2-3 Kid on Raw. And I remember how awesome that was. But from that point on, I was working full time and going to college and, you know, interested in social life and kind of stopped watching wrestling until around 2013. Like I was aware of it and saw things, but I didn't tune in or anything. And so I remember the movie The Wrestler that I was, I thought that was great and I was excited to watch that. But the actual product of the weekly programming, I just kind of didn't watch that anymore. And my wife and I got together in the summer of 96. And it wasn't until around like 2012 that she even knew I was a big wrestling fan when I brought home my figures. I think I talked about it a little bit, but yeah, I just kind of left wrestling for all those years. So kind of weird.
Wild. So you finished off your LJN collection. Did you ever get into the Hasbros or the Jacks? Well, probably not. And then Mattel, or do you just focus on the LJNs?
So around 2016, 2017, we were in Kmart. Didn't shop there much, but I remember seeing a 3-pack in Kmart of Roddy Piper, Ricky Steamboat, and Randy Savage, some Mattels. And I was like, you know, those are so cool looking. And they were just the basic figures, but I hadn't paid attention. So to me, I just thought they're super cool. So they had them on closeout for, I think it was still $29.99, which they eventually, I think, went cheaper. But they had like a whole rack full of them. They probably had a dozen of them. And I saw them two or three times in there. And finally, I got those. So those were the first non-LJN figures I got, I'd say probably 2017, 2018. And then since then, in the last few years, I've started collecting the Mattel Elites, primarily some of the Ultimates. And I've gone back and gotten, like I got a Roddy Piper Hasbro. And then there was a guy on Twitter that made me a real nice deal on about 6 or 7 other Hasbros. So I've got about 11 Hasbros in my collection, and I've got, now I've probably got 60 Mattels, Elites and whatnot, maybe more, but my guess is around 60, but it's primarily the Legends figures, the guys that I watched as a kid. I think I've only got 3 figures that are as people are actually younger than me. I got that John Cena that was from the WrestleMania where he went against the Fiend in the what was it called, the Firefly Funhouse match, where he came with the Vince McMahon puppet. So that's one figure that's the guy's a couple years younger than me, and I won a Drew McIntyre figure from a contest on Twitter, and then I got a Ronda Rousey with the Hot Rod shirt and Roddy's jacket going through a table somewhat recently. So those are the only three figures I think I own where the wrestler themselves is younger than me. All the others are pretty much from that 80s, early 90s era.
Yeah, the golden era. I think we're going to take a quick break right now, and then we'll be right back to talk to you about your customs and the LGNs, and be right back.
Sounds good.
Hey everybody, I'm Soda.
And I am Ethan.
And we are In the Marbles with Soda and Ethan. We are a NASCAR podcast that talks about the past week's race, and we review the upcoming race for the Trucks, Xfinity, and the Cup Series.
Yes, we also host a fun and interactive NASCAR Fantasy Cup Series where participants can win up to $500 in prizes each season.
$500 in prizes.
Yes, and the best part is it's completely free to join. No subscription, no Patreon, just pick your driver each week for a chance to win prizes. The participant with the most points at the end of the season wins an actual In the Marbles Fantasy Cup Series Championship trophy.
That's right, an actual trophy. So we hope you will join us next time on In the Marbles with Soda and Ethan. And before we get out here, you got anything you want to add?
As always, peace, love, and all the above.
And we'll see you in the marbles.
So how do you make a commercial about something so random?
I don't know.
You make it pretty random.
That's right.
So if you enjoy lots of random stuff, like food... Or top fives.
Random facts.
Dirty facts.
I try to keep them clean.
She tries. But come listen to Tales from the Estate. We have lots of fun. We try to drop shows every week.
Try.
Sometimes we do. Sometimes we don't.
The kids are a bear.
They are. But yeah, come listen. Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
So I wanted to get into the custom LJNs because I think that's one of the things that really grabbed my attention about you and what you're doing and kind of drew me to you initially was these LJNs that you were touching up and kind of making them truer to life in some ways, restoring them, but also just giving some of these cool details that LJN, you know, I'm not going to say they didn't do them right or whatever. I think they did the best they could at the time they came out. Some people may look at them now and, you know, some of the younger wrestling fans, I don't think have the appreciation for many, many reasons that we do. But you grabbed my attention by doing some of these reworks. How did you get started into that? And what was kind of the genesis of that for you?
Well, it's kind of funny. Like, I had this attitude for the last, I don't know, when I started recollecting the figures, I would see on eBay and different places where there was guys that had touched them up, and a lot of them, they didn't do the best jobs, and I was always careful not to get one that had been touched up because I wanted the original paint to look good, so I didn't want something where somebody had just redone it and was making it, you know, like it was before and selling it under the false pretense that it was original paint. And I'd gotten a couple custom figures back when I was building the collection of Dingo Warrior and Ultimate Warrior. Both of them were done by somebody super talented that took Paul Orndorff figures and made them into these custom figures. And I'd also seen customs that people had done of themselves. So I had this this coworker, she and her husband worked with me at the place I worked. And when I was getting these wrestling figures, I'd get them at work and bring them home from there. And so I ended up showing her one of these things. She was an artist, a graphic artist, and I said, yeah, some people even get them done of themselves. And she's like, well, I'll do one of those for you. And so on her own, she picked out this Nikolai Volkoff and used a Dremel to like make him more of Brian type physique, not so muscular and huge. And then she painted jeans onto him and, you know, basically dremeled off the knee pads and the extra parts of the boots. So it looked like I was just wearing regular shoes, and painted jeans and a Bob Dylan t-shirt that I selected and made my own custom figure. So around that 2015, 2016 range, when she did that for me, and her name's Karen Riedler, she's an artist down in San Diego that does children's books and all kinds of different murals and all kinds of art projects. And this is something she did for the first time, and she knocked it out of the park with this custom figure of me. But I saw all these different figures people had done on eBay, and it was something I kind of wanted to do. And then on Twitter, just in the last year, one of the guys that I follow, Mark Halverson, he posted an Iron Sheik, where Iron Sheik was in just standard trunks instead of the long tights like he normally wore. And so Mark had posted an Iron Sheik and a Freddie Blassie, and he also had a Pink Tights Heart Foundation that he'd done. So I was like, well, man, I'm going to start figuring out how I can paint these things. So I reached out to him and asked him what techniques he used, and he explained it was acrylic paint and that he brushed on Mod Podge when he was finished, and told me with the Sheik how he used an X-Acto knife to remove the parts of his tights that stick out a little bit more so that the leg would be more smooth. So it was a while before I got into doing the Sheik. It was a few months of doing other figures before I tried doing an Iron Sheik. But after talking to him, it was late January, right around the time football season was over, where I decided that I would start painting some of these guys. So I ordered some figures on eBay, and then it just kind of got crazy. I ended up, I think I've done around 80 repaints in the first 6 months of doing them. Anyway, so each of these repaints, I decided, well, I wanted it to be fairly obvious that it wasn't just touching up a figure. So almost all of them, I would try to give more detail to them than they had. So I love painting on the white laces on the boots of figures that had, you know, white laces on the boots. When I look at King Kong Bundy from WrestleMania 2, it looks like he has black laces, so usually I'll just leave Bundy's laces black and paint the soles of his boots white, and then I'll add, just white wrist tape, which is real simple, around his wrists like he had, and these other figures. Like, I was never happy with Brutus Beefcake's attire that was similar to what he wore at WrestleMania 1. So when I did a Brutus Beefcake figure, I did the white boots and then the yellow tights with the stripe type design that he had at WrestleMania 2, and the magenta gloves. And so I just really got into trying to do figures the way I would have wanted them done. And like, even the Andre figure is pretty simple, the Series 1 Andre with just the blue boots and blue trunks. So with him, I'd do red boots and paint in the white laces and the white soles, and pretty much every one that I've done, I think I've done 29 of the different figures with new paint out of the whole line. So there's more than half that I haven't done yet. It gets a little spendy in some of them, but just getting them. But that Series 6 and Series 5, those figures are up there price-wise and more rare. But yeah, just giving more detail to them, it just kind of was exciting to me. And so, I've done, like I say, about 80 of them. I've been able to give away quite a few of them to wrestlers or wrestlers' kids or friends, and then sold several online. It's not really a profit thing so much as just a sharing the love of the figures. Unfortunately, it'd be something where I'd probably be working for $5 or $6 an hour if I was for what I sell them for. So, maybe someday I'll sell them for more money, but it's really time consuming. And so a lot of them, when I get them done, I want to at least have one for me before I'll sell one to somebody else. So yeah, I'm running out of space over here with all the custom ones that I painted and the originals and variants that I have. But yeah, it's been super fun. As a kid, my mom and dad spoiled the heck out of my brother and I with gifts and love and trips to Disneyland and like I say, we didn't want for anything as kids. They really spoiled us and great parents. But you know, my mom had this love of Disney, so from a young age I started drawing and wanted to be a Disney artist probably when I was like 4 years old. And then in the last 25 years or so, every Halloween my creative outlet is I would take I usually get these fairly large pumpkins, these giant pumpkins, and do these elaborate pumpkin carvings. So that's been you know, my once a year like big creative outlet is I'll do at least 3 or 4 fairly elaborate pumpkin carvings at Halloween. And if anybody wants to ever do those, you really got to do them like the day before Halloween, because they don't last long. And then, yeah. And then usually they're gone the day after Halloween. So yeah, that'd be my closest thing in the last 25 years or so is doing, you know, fancy pumpkins every year. And then in the last 6 months, kind of getting into painting the figures. And there's been, you know, a learning curve as far as realizing you need these fine tip brushes, and the more you have, the better. So you're not running to the sink to have to clean them over and over again. If you have a few brushes, that helps, so you can keep working. And yeah, it's just been a really fun hobby, and people that get a hold of them or have one in their hands, once they have one, it's kind of cool hearing the nostalgic feelings that they have over having something that they, you know, haven't checked out in 30 plus years since they were kids.
Right. So Karen is the one who kind of jump-started it all for you, it sounds like.
Yeah, 2015, 2016, as far as seeing what could be done, and then kind of just having that in the back of my head all these years. And then, and like I say, at the end of December, probably last year, when I saw Mark Halverson on Twitter, saw his stuff and reached out to him. And then it seemed like, okay, I'm actually going to try this. And so yeah, it's between that seed of seeing him on eBay, her making one for me, you know, 7-8 years ago, and then all these years later, that idea kind of still there. And then talking to somebody that actually does it. And also guys like, you know, Jason Wolf, I reached out to him on Twitter, and he prefers working on the Hasbro style figures. I don't think he's crazy about the medium as far as the big rubber figures, and that it's not what he's into dealing with. But yeah, anybody I've reached out to for guidance has been super friendly and helpful. And then it's just a matter of getting in and doing it. So luckily I've had the time to do it and actually gone through with it. So yeah, it's been a fun project for sure.
A lot of those characters were done, I hate to say done wrong, but done inaccurately, or a combination of things where either they did somebody in all blue, like Andre when he had the red boots, you know, things of that nature. And so it was just a matter of, for them, I'm sure it was cheaper just to do both in the same color, that sort of thing. But then there was stuff like Morocco's shirt and Piper's shirt and their gear, where it was like, as far as I was concerned, I don't remember them ever wearing that. So those two in particular really grabbed my attention with the rework you were able to do on making their shirts accurate. And both of those just, man, you talk about taking like a 5 to a 10 really quick, as far as I'm concerned. How did you come up with the idea to do the custom shirts for those?
Oh, same thing. Like you see things that people have done on eBay and steal their ideas. And so like when I saw the Morocco, that wave shirt, that, you know, I always felt like he should have had that. Instead of that black shirt that just says Magnificent Morocco. So, like, you know, or like Roddy's. Yeah. Or like Roddy's shirt, just having Hot Rod only in yellow. So I saw that when I looked closer, I could see that it was something where they had cut out an image and attached it to the figure. So then I found out that, yeah, you can put a little bit of, you know, you can get the shirt all painted white and do like the black rings for Morocco's shirt, or the red rings for Roddy's shirt, or if you're going to do the Panther logo on Roddy, just do the white shirt. Yeah. So I just strip all the paint off, put a new coat of paint on, and then saw that I can, I went online and started searching for images and captured some images of Morocco's shirt, of Roddy's hot rod and Roddy's Panther, and then played around with sizing and printed them out just on regular paper and cut them out, and then, you know, carefully cut out to try and cut off as much of the edges and the border as possible, and then brushed on a thin layer of this Mod Podge, and then put the images down and Mod Podged over them, and yeah, they turned out super cool looking. It's something that it does take some time and some practice, but yeah, it really makes a difference. And then there's other figures like Kamala and Ricky Steamboat, where, you know, I know Ricky Steamboat had the black tights that he wore for a while in WWF, but having one that has the white tights and the more detail like he wore at WrestleMania 3, that was something that I really wanted to make. So that's been a popular one. I've sent a few of those out to people. Or Kamala, you know, having an orange skirt, and then it always bugged me how underneath they just left it plain brown and didn't paint it. So I've done like three Kamala figures where I looked up the designs for leopard print and saw that there's three different styles of spots they would use to do leopard print. So I did more of a beige African skirt that he wears instead of the orange with the stripes, and then did each of those three different styles of spots for the leopard spots and things like that. That one's a fun one to do, but a more expensive figure. But yeah, it just makes it night and day cooler than the original LJN designs, doing something like Ricky Steamboat with white trunks with the dragons on the sides of his boots, or Kamala with the leopard spot skirt instead of the orange, and filling in the rest of it. So yeah, it's when you get all done with these things, even though they might take 6 hours on average, and some of them like 10 hours, when you get it all done, it's really cool to sit there and check it out and see how much better it looks than it did originally. So yeah, definitely fun for me, at least.
Yeah, man, and the possibilities are endless. I mean, there's so many attires. There's, you take somebody like Orndorff, and you can do them in white and blue and red. And on the simpler side, I would imagine, compared to some of these other ones you're doing. But each figure, many of them have multiple attires that you can do. So it could keep you busy for quite a long time.
Yeah, I also wanted to do ones of like what I saw them wearing in person. So like Tito Santana was wearing this deep red when I saw him wrestle on two different occasions, so the purple always bugged me. So doing this deep like blood red color on his tights and knee pads to me looks way better than the purple, you know. Or like, I would love to have a Danny Davis as a referee LJN someday, that, you know. So there's some figures they didn't make, so guys like Sin Bodhi do 3D prints of LJN figures that are in resin and, you know, super lightweight and not the same material, but they're sized correctly. So I got a Butch Reed from him and painted that Butch Reed to look like, to wear the same gear that he wore when I saw Butch Reed. I ended up seeing him three times, and he wore similar gear all three times with the red and blue, and he had mismatched knee pads. So it's fun for me to put them in the gear that I actually saw them wrestle in, for sure.
There's a shortage of Butch Reed figures out there, unfortunately. So it's a cool one to have.
Definitely.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I like to ask my guests when I have them on here is what they've found or purchased lately, in the wild or online, eBay, Mercari, wherever you buy your stuff. What figures have you found recently?
So for me, I've slowed down a little bit, and the ones that I just ordered were the Big Rubber Guys. I got Axe and Smash that are supposed to be coming in November, and then I, as far as another order I'd been waiting on for a while from Ringside Collectibles, I got three figures that are, you know, older Legends type figures. I got the Randy Savage in the King gear, and as we talk here, it looks like Randy Savage's agreement with WWF may have ended. I see something where I think Zombie Sailor may have reached agreement with the Randy Savage estate. They just canceled a Randy Savage figure that had been scheduled for release. But yeah, the order I just got was a Randy Savage in his King gear in the Mattel line, and I got the Defining Moments Bret Hart. I had had that Ultimate Bret on order, and then when I saw the Defining Moments more closely represented his WrestleMania 8 gear, I canceled the Ultimate and just went with the WrestleMania 8 gear Bret Hart. Those two were, if not Mount Rushmore, top five all time for me. Bret and Randy are two of my all time favorites. And then a King Harley Race. I got to see Harley Race main event against superstar Billy Graham August 20th of 87, but it's been a while since a Mattel for him was available. I wasn't collecting Mattel when that original Harley Race figure that's gone up in price so much came out. So like I say, the three that I most recently got were Randy Savage in his King gear, Harley Race in his King gear, and Bret Hart in the WrestleMania 8 look are the three that I've gotten recently. And I got a Mega Powers pack a few months ago that almost all my figures, I'll open them up, but I haven't opened that set up yet with Hulk and Randy and the Mega Powers gear from Ringside Collectibles.
Yeah, with the welded handshake, man, that's a great display piece. I know I don't think I can bring myself to open that either.
Are you a mint on card or an open figure primarily, or pretty much a mix?
Mostly I'm opening everything these days, aside from some legends that are near and dear to me. I keep in the box, or anybody that I want to get signed, I may have in the box. So there's some figures I'll have one open and one in the box even, but most of them I'm opening aside from those.
Yeah. Me, same here. Just the Mega Powers set I haven't opened yet. And then, I'm about to open that Randy Savage one, and I opened the King Harley Race already, and I'll open up the Bret one soon, but I'm kind of doing those slowly. And then the only character that I have in opened and non-opened, I've got the Roddy Piper They Lived open, or They Live opened and non-opened, you know, and still in the package. And I got a Cowboy Bob Orton on clearance, the boxing Mattel figure. Oh, yeah. So I had him sign one of those at the 80s Wrestling Con, and I have one open that I use for figure photography and stuff too.
Real cool, man. Are you in on the Muhammad Ali Ultimate? Are you going to try to grab one of those?
I'm going to hold off. I'm trying to be more selective. And so I think it's an awesome figure, or an awesome two figures. It looks great, but yeah, it's one of those that I'll draw the line at. And even sure. The Coliseum collection, I'll get the Roddy Piper George Steele because Roddy's in it, but I'm going to be real selective in the rest of the line. And that one, unfortunately, although it looks great, I'm going to hold off on it. How about you?
Yeah, I'm going to try to get it. I want the referee. I don't really have any use or need for the boxing figure, but we'll see. I'll probably get one, open it, keep the referee, and find a home for the boxing figure. Not that I don't think the world of the boxer Muhammad Ali, I just don't have any use for that in my collection. So I'm like you, I got to try to draw a hard line and try to keep it limited to what I need.
Yeah. I was kind of hoping that the Coliseum collection Roddy would come with two shirts and have the Panther shirt and the Hot Rod shirt in there, just so that it would recreate WrestleMania, the first WrestleMania where he still had the Panther shirt. And I was also hoping that Orndorff would have been included instead of George Steele. But yeah, if they come out with a Pat Patterson referee, then, you know, you could theoretically have Muhammad Ali on the outside of the ring in his ref gear, Hogan and T, Roddy Pat Patterson and Paul Orndorff are the only missing ultimate pieces from that match. But
yeah, you kind of got to get the Danny Davis referee and then pop the Pat Patterson head on there, I guess, is all you could do for the time being.
Yeah, and I hadn't even thought about that. But yeah, did you have, were you able to put the Danny Davis build a figure together? Do you have one of those?
Yeah, I do. Actually, I got, so I've got extras. I'm a Mattel freak. I've got several referees. I buy a lot of the Warsman heads, and he made the Hebners and Joey Morella and some different guys. So I've actually got a handful of referees in Mattel form.
Very cool. Yeah. And when's the last time you counted your collection?
Oh man, I've never officially counted, and I'm scared. I mean, I'm building a spreadsheet with all my guys on there, so it's frightening. Yeah, it's up there.
Yeah, I hear you. Yep. I went down a rabbit hole of collecting Bob Dylan concerts that were live recordings, and yeah, it's pages and pages worth. So, yep. I know what you mean. Yep.
If you were going to put together a Rushmore of LJN figures, whether you have them or not, who would you put in that? Not based on what they did in the ring, but just your four favorite LJN figures, whether you own them or not.
So I do have the whole collection. The I know Piper and Bundy would be on there. That Bundy figure has always been a favorite of mine. Roddy's my favorite. Kamala's real high. I mean, it's tough to keep like Hogan and JYD off of there, and Sheik is so good. It's such a loaded question. Savage is great. I guess if I was gonna say off the top of my head and try to narrow it down to four, I'd have to go with Roddy and Bundy, and I guess I got to keep Hogan on there. He's just so iconic. And I guess Randy. So I'll go Savage, Hogan, Randy, or Roddy and Bundy as the one today, and it could change tomorrow.
Yeah. I could talk to you forever, and I'm sure we're going to talk many more times in the future, and you can revise that down the road. Where can people find you? Do you have anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
Yeah, if you aren't tired of my rambling yet, I have a show called Legendary Wrestling Figures. It's spelled a little weird. It's LEJENDARY, so that it can have LJN in the word. So Legendary Wrestling Figures on Apple and Spotify, and I get to, I've been able to interview several guys, including you, Tim. Everybody's had some awesome stories of the wrestling fandom and figures. And then, I'm also on Twitter at 80_wrestling. I'd like to post, pictures of, wrestling figures, primarily LJNs and, some match back in history around the day that I post them, and also put a daily poll up there almost every day, something wrestling related. So yeah, if you're into the golden era and LJN figures and that kind of thing, I'm 80s wrestling fan on Twitter at 80_wrestling. And my podcast is Legendary Wrestling Figures. And I've had a blast talking to you. I had a blast with you as a guest on my show. So always love talking wrestling with you, Tim. Thank you so much.
Yeah, man. I appreciate you making time to talk to me on my podcast. And I want to thank you, dude. I mean, I saw your figures and heard your podcast. And you kind of lit the fire in me under me to get going. So I also wanted to say congratulations on you tying the knot with your longtime girlfriend and getting married, man.
Yeah, 27 years on the 4th of July, and the next morning we're just like, yeah, let's do it. So I'm still kind of excited about it, and which I guess I should be. She's the best person best person I know and have known ever. So I love her a lot, and I'm happy that we're finally married. And now my two nieces are actually lawfully by marriage my two nieces instead of just calling them that. So yeah, it's pretty cool to be in the crew of married folks. Thank you.
Yeah, the last time I talked to you, you were calling her your girlfriend, and this time you're calling her your wife. So time flies, and congratulations to you guys. One of the last time-honored traditions of my podcast is I like to ask my guests to pick any wrestling theme of their choosing, past, present, I guess not future, but past or present, and we'll get out of here with that theme.
Oh, let's do Roddy's bagpipes. Those are that's who I always enjoyed hearing the most is Roddy's bagpipes and knowing he's on the way to the ring. So I appreciate that, Tim. Thank you.
Right on, man. Brian, thank you again so much, brother, and I can't wait to hear what you got coming up, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thank you, Tim. I really appreciate you. Take care, and I will talk to you again soon.
Take care.
Before I get out of here, I just want to do some shout outs and a big thank you first off to Brian, 80s Wrestling Fan on Twitter, for being on the podcast. Brian's an awesome dude, and get over there and check out what he's doing. Support him. Big love, Brian. Shout out to Drew Venzel. He's got a great show, Tales from the Estate. He's the proprietor of great stories, fun facts, and hilarity, but he's a better friend, which says everything. So if you're not checking out Drew's podcast, get over there and check it out and support the guy. Him and Caitlin are an amazing show. They make me laugh every single week, and it's edutainment at its very finest. Go support Tales from the Estate podcast. Do it now. Buy a shirt. Go get one. Shout out to the Cali contingent, Manny, aka Figure Kingdom, and Dobro. Shout out to my buddy Ring Skirts. Big love to you, Nate. You're provoking the stoke each and every week. Shout out to my buddy JJ at Custom Toy Rings. If you need a ring, if you need a cage, get over there and check out Custom Toy Rings. JJ's putting in amazing work. Old school WWF cage. Go get one. Shout out to Slicks Rick the Ruler at Curb Stomp Custom Decals. Warren Worsman's Custom Heads, Dan Turnquist, the Beltmaster. Why buy figures for belts when you can get pretty much the mini version of the real thing from Dan? Go check him out. Shout out to Dylan over at the Wrestling Figure Database. If you're not checking him out and supporting him, get over there and do it. He's got every wrestler ever made, basically, on one website, and the searchability is incredible, so go support Dylan. And go check out Jason Wolf. He's got a podcast and he makes amazing Hasbros and other fine custom figures. Go support the Wolf Man. My podcasting pals might not be in the NASCAR, but if you listen to their podcast, you will be. So get over and check out Ethan and Soda Hunter with the In the Marbles podcast. Love that podcast, and they've got me watching the sport again. Shout out to you two brothers. Shout out to the Fully Posable Wrestling Figure podcast, as well as Scott's side project, Drunk Wrestling History. Local Boys Making Good. Shout out to the Tunes. Shout out to Breaker and Bane's Power Hour, which I hear may be on hiatus now, hoping they will make a return. And I'm also looking forward to a return from No Holds Barred with Bill Benis, one of my favorite podcasts, and I hope to hear new episodes of that soon. Shout out to Big Underscore Bane. You're the man, brother. Shout out to Adam Baum, Cella Toys, Junk Shop Dog, M&M Figure Clothing, Ralphie Vibes, Rad Chad, Grenville, a.k.a. Hasbook, Cal Peterson, Nick Haddix, Steve Hoker, and Matt Goldberg. That's it for this episode. Thank everybody for checking this out. Thanks for supporting the podcast. It's been a long time off, and I'm hoping to be back and present a little more frequently than I have been. Life gets in the way, man, and priorities. But I appreciate everybody who stayed in contact, everybody who's supported this podcast and supported me as a friend. And you know who you are, and it means the world to me. So we'll be in touch real soon, everybody. We'll be back with some more giveaways. Got lots of figures and lots of good stuff to give back to the community as always. But that's it for now. I hope you'll join me again right here next time on Pulling Up a Chair. Thank you for listening to Pulling Up a Chair with a Chair Shot. If you enjoyed it, please help put the show over by telling a friend and clicking the subscribe button on Anchor, Google, Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. You will get instant notifications whenever a new show drops. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at achairshot. That's A-C-H-A-I-R-S-H-O-T. You will want to keep an eye on my socials in the coming weeks. Trust me. Feel free to leave questions or audio comments on the show page on Anchor FM's website or email them to me directly at achairshot@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in again, and until next week, Bobby.
All good things must come to an end, right?
Well, every time changes everything.
And a friend in need is a pest.